My name is Russell Spatz. I'm an alcoholic. I think I'll take just an extra 3 hours tonight. I'm a member of the Carl Gables group of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I haven't found necessary to take a drink, nor have I had a drink since January 25th, 1981. And, my sponsor when I first came in, my first sponsor, I've had three. You know, every once in a while somebody asks me, will you be my temporary sponsor? I said, I'm not quite sure how to make it permanent. Can't nail that thing to the wall. You know, they die. I've had two sponsors die, pass away, sober with many, many years. And my current sponsor has, I think, 53 years or something like that. It's a wonderful man named John. But my first sponsor, Bob Sullivan, used to say to me, you know, Russ, many are called, but few are chosen. And whatever that means. But it gave me the same sort of feeling, in a sense, that when I went to law school, they said, I was sitting there in law school, and they said, look to your right and look to your left, you know, one of those guys won't be there next year. And true to their word, you know, there was a great falling out rate. True to what my sponsor said, over the last 31 years, I've noticed a huge falling out rate. Just reporting. It's hard to understand that because maybe it's just my memory or whatever, but you only remember, in a sense, the people that you always see. And you tend to forget, unfortunately, people that don't show up at meetings. And I remember early on somebody sent me, and I have the statistics. I'm happy to send this to anybody. A couple of statistical studies, who knows whether they're right or wrong or whatever. You know, I'm not going to say that these are provable or whatever, but they're statistical papers regarding Alcoholics Anonymous and whatever statistics they took on it. And the word was, I think at that time, some of them are pretty recent, that 0.5% of the people that come into AA stay sober for more than 20 years. It's like 1 in 200 or something. You know, it's kind of hard to see that because the rooms are, you know, you walk in the room, there's like tons of people, you know, and, you know, it looks like everybody's staying sober. And, of course, everybody's not staying sober. There's a lot of people that come in and out and they get some sobriety and they drop out. And I was at a meeting this morning and one of the guys at the meeting, Michael, you know, just happened to go to him. He was sharing that he went into a treatment center or some sort of center. It was up here, as a matter of fact. Where in the 2 years, he was there for 2 years. And in the 2 years he was there, 4,000 people went through the center. 4,000. And he said out of the 4,000, 25 graduated. And it's now 18 years later for him. He's got 18 years, and he's the only one sober. So I said, hey, I've been told 0.5% of 1%. That's like 0.25% of 1%. You know, so I don't know what the deal is. I know when I was going through law school, for whatever reason, when I heard that deal, that it was so hard, it was so difficult, that, you know, look to your right, look to your left, one of those guys won't be there. In a sense, I didn't get word because I just knew I was going to be there because I wanted it that bad. That's how badly I wanted it. And I believe, you know, the same sort of thing works in Alcoholics Anonymous. Because it has been my experience that after you get sober, life doesn't stop happening. You know, I don't know about you, but every month FPNL still sends the same damn bill. Even though I wash the dishes every day, there's more dishes to wash. I mean, it's like it's always happening. The same people that clog the expressways and act stupid are still out there. People are still doing the same stupid things that they were always doing. And for some reason, people have still not elected me king of the universe. And they're just not following my instructions. If only I could always get my way. If only you guys would understand. Just do it my way. Everything will be okay. But, you know, it doesn't seem to work out that way after you get sober, does it? I was about, I guess I've been doing these series for about 27 years now, and, you know, obviously a lot has changed. You know, you evolve, one would hope you evolve, you know, because you're, it's one thing to read these things and to sort of get them, quote, intellectually, whatever that means. I've seen a lot of very, very smart people bounce out of the rooms. I've seen a lot of, you know, people with IQs of a carrot get these things really well. And apparently the disease centers in our mind, not our body. Apparently the drinking is not the disease, it's just a symptom of being crazy. You know, apparently the booze is just something I use in order not to feel so shitty about myself. Apparently, if you're an alcoholic, like I spoke of last week, there's some sort of whatever insulation everybody else gets to be able to cope with life and all the vagaries of life and the disappointments and all the people you run into. Whatever that insulation is that normal people get so that things don't affect them that badly, I was not given that insulation. And I take a lot of crap personally. And I used to say to my sponsor, I was sensitive. And he says, no, he says, great artists are sensitive, Russell. You're just touchy. And I'm a guy who takes things personally, and I see things in a personal way. And if there's 10,000 people stuck in a traffic jam, all I'm saying is, man, this always happens to me. And I believe that. I don't believe there's anybody else in the jam except for me. Nobody has the problems I have. My problems are unique. They're worse than anybody else's. And I have seen alcoholics, and I don't put them down because I am exact there. But for the grace of God goes I, and I've done every crazy thing I've seen alcoholics do in Alcoholics Anonymous and outside of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I've done it, or I'm capable of doing it. And I have seen alcoholics in a room. I just saw it recently. It's an amazing thing. You know, if you become a student of this program and a student of this disease, it's like a giant sitcom. It's really something. And I was just at a meeting. We have a meeting on Friday nights. You talk about an extra 15 minutes. Every Friday night we have a meeting of a group called the Alive Again Group. We start at 7 o'clock, and we always end at 10. 3 hours. Now, you can walk out. You don't have to stay. One or two people leave, but about 20, 30 people stay for 3 hours. And I swear to God, at the end of 3 hours, it feels like you've been there for 15 minutes. And they hang up because that's how good the meeting is. There's no whining. Well, I shouldn't say there's no whining allowed. I should actually say you whine at your peril. Because we have crosstalk. It's like the old Oxford group. Spanking is allowed. You know, and the ones that can't take it, they leave and they don't come back. And the ones that get hurt, but they want sobriety, they come back and they stop whining. It's amazing. They sort of grow up. And they start talking differently, and 3 weeks later, they're like almost like they sound like adults. You know, because alcoholics are sort of like, you know, the person you'll be in the next 5 years will depend on who you hang out with and the books you read. And the truth of the matter is the books I read depend upon who I hang out with. How I act, how I think, how I talk, my self-talk, everything about me really depends a lot on who I choose to hang out with. And one of the great things that happened to me, I don't know why it happened to me this way, and it just did. And I give all credit to God for many reasons, but I can't take credit myself because when I was out there running things, I was always screwing it up. So it must be God. It can't be me because I never got it right. But for some reason, I was attracted. You know, they say it's a program of attracted. For some reason, I was attracted to men who didn't whine. I was attracted to men that didn't have chips on their shoulder. I was attracted to men that were steady. I was attracted to men that didn't gossip or talk about other people badly behind their back. I was attracted to men who were positive. I was attracted to men who did not suffer fools, who were not scared to tell you, why don't you just go out and drink? Or why don't you just shut up? Or we don't want to hear that crap. You know, I was attracted to men that, you know, I guess if I had a, you know, I don't want to, like, put down my father or, you know, or anything like that, but you know, my father's still alive. He's a wonderful man. But I went through a divorce. I came from an alcoholic family. And I think, and I'm not saying this is why I'm an alcoholic at all, because I've seen people come from marvelous families and they're still alcoholics. But I'm not sure I ever had a man in my life, you know, a real man with the kind of character that I wanted to have, that I was attracted to in Alcoholics Anonymous, where I could learn from this person what to think about and what's important and what's not important and things like that. Now, I'm not sure if I would have had one, I would have listened anyway. Because like most alcoholics, I was addicted to feeling good. I was addicted to pleasure. I was addicted to anything that would make me feel okay. And I thought if it made me feel okay and I felt good, then The World was good, and it was good. And I thought if it made me feel bad, or it hurt me, or it scared me, or it was tough on me, then that was bad. And of course, I learned after many years is that I've got it all wrong. That it was the feeling good stuff that was killing me and keeping me stunted, my emotional growth stunted. And it was the tough stuff that was helping me and was learning me how to have character and be a man. And I ran from the tough stuff and the tough people and the people that called me on my stuff. And I hung out with the people that patted me on the back when I said stupid, bad things, and enabled me to act like a two-year-old. And I did that sober. Now, drinking had nothing to do with that. Drinking is just something I wish I could say that all the bad things I did, it's alcohol's fault. It's not my fault I'm a nice guy, it's alcohol's fault, but most of the people I hurt in my life, before and after Alcoholics Anonymous, I hurt them the same way, using the same thinking, mostly cold stone sober. Most of the people I promised I would do something then break my promise, the phone calls I wouldn't return, the bills I wouldn't pay, the money I misspent, the people who the irresponsibility I had nothing to do with alcohol. You know, my excuses, you know, my feeling sorry for myself. Let me tell you something, I don't need alcohol to feel sorry for myself. It just helps. You know, just sort of, it's sort of like a Jado pack. It makes it go faster, that's all. You know, so like, but it takes years to learn. It takes time to learn a lot of this stuff about yourself. You know, the only thing, I came into Alcoholics Anonymous because I had a drinking problem, and that's what I thought alcoholism was. I thought it was about drinking. And I guess you know, like we talked about this last week, I guess you would sort of forget that. I mean, the name sort of gives it away, Alcoholics Anonymous. But you know, and you read the book, but even though you read the book, you know, when I came in, I looked the man in the eye and I said, my life was destroyed. I had lost everything, but the thing I probably lost the most was my self-respect. I don't know whether I had any in the first place, but whatever little self-esteem I had was gone. And I was 31 years old and I thought my life was over and it would never get better again. And if I was addicted to anything, it was feeling sorry for myself, besides alcohol. Feeling like I was a victim. You know, in 2 Corinthians, the Apostle Paul says, worldly sorrow leads to death, but godly sorrow leads to repentance and salvation. And I now know the difference between worldly sorrow and godly sorrow. I know the difference. I know what worldly sorrow is all about. I know what it's about to sit around in your life, no matter what's going on, and feel sorry about yourself and be a thumb-sucking crybaby, and think you're a victim, and to whine, and to bitch, and to moan. I know what it's like to sit in AA meeting. This just happened the other day, and, you know, I was, and I see this stuff, where a guy is sitting there and sharing about how he just had his 17-year-old son die of brain cancer, and tell the entire group what he's been going through, and reporting, not whining, and how he's been looking to God and the stuff he went through dying from brain cancer, and go to the next person without missing a beat saying, I have a problem with cookies. Not even, boy, you know, I mean, it has nothing to do with that, but this is my problem. Because she wasn't even listening. Because she was, I know what it's like, that how you could sit next to somebody who's got cancer or dying and hearing about that and not even listen to them because you're so wrapped up in the cookie problem that you're having. And that's what alcoholics are. That's what the nature of this disease is. That's the kind of disease you're dealing with sober. It says it in the big book, and I believe what it says in the big book. I don't believe my own thinking or my own opinion. My own opinion about myself is wrong. It always led me wrong because I'm using my brain. That's where the problem is. And what it says in the big book, it says the nature of our problem, the basic nature of our problem is that we're selfish and we're self-centered. All we do is think about ourselves. Everything is about us. Driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, we step on the toes of others and hurt other people, and they retaliate, and we think we're the victims, and we're extreme examples of self-will run riot, which means all we do is think about what we want, what's important to us, what we want, and our feelings are the most important thing. As a matter of fact, I shouldn't say the most important thing, because that would indicate that we actually think there's something in second place. And if you're an alcoholic, there ain't nothing in second place. It's all about you and your feelings, and everybody else can die. That's pretty much basically it, and that's the way you live your life, and that's the way you think all the time. You think about you, yourself, your plans, your designs, your life, how you're doing, and if you ever think of anybody else, ever, and you're an alcoholic, the only thing you're thinking is comparing yourself to the other person and how you're doing. That's what it is. You're just saying, he's got more, I've got more, he's got less, why can't I be like him? It's all about me, 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 and you may be able to stop the drinking, but you can't stop the me. The me is very, very hard to stop. That's the real addiction. It says we're self-will run riot, but we usually don't think so. So we don't even see it. Even we're in the midst of it, we don't get it. And, you know, we're also defiant. That's what the book says. That's our chief characteristic. So if somebody is crazy enough to go up to us and maybe point that out to us, the natural thing an alcoholic does is scratch that person off the list and say he's full of crap. So we run from the truth. The truth is really blocked. That's part of our protective mechanism, is that even when the light is shown on what the real problem is, we don't really believe that's the problem. You know, that's what it says. It says we must get rid of this selfishness. We must, or it kills us. It doesn't even bruise us or hurt. It kills us. He says God makes that possible. And if you go to enough AA meetings, you'll realize that most alcoholics don't really want to talk about God. They want to sort of do this thing psychologically when the whole book is about God. Well, that's what the whole deal is about it. It says in, after you do this thing for about 30, what happens is when I first started doing this thing, of course, the steps, when I first came in, the steps were like a mystery to me. Because if I could do this stuff naturally, if this stuff came naturally to me, now I understand the fellowship thing. I understand the don't drink and go to meetings thing. I even sort of got the stay away from slippery people and slippery places. You learn these things as you go along. You learn you can't drink. You learn about the first, you learn about the do's and the don'ts. You get involved with the fellowship. You know, next thing you know, they want you to stop with the resentments. They want you to stop with the gossip. They want you to stop with the, I learn all, but you learn that over a period of weeks and months and things like that. But there's nothing like experience. Experiencing life on life's terms over and over again. Because, you know, people like us, we got to do it over and over again. Isn't that right? You know, you guys didn't come in here because you got a bad batch of ice on a Saturday night. You know what I mean? This is, I don't know about you, but I started learning my lessons when you get hit over the head for the 1,000th time. You know what it says, the way alcoholics get a new perspective in step 7, which is what we're on tonight, by the way, and I'm going to talk about that. This is what this is going to be about. It says, through 1,000 forms of humiliation and the final crushing of our self-sufficiency. Maybe it says 100 forms of humiliation. I don't know. What do you think? Let's see. It says right here, it says, for us, the process of gaining a new perspective was unbelievably painful. Oh, I'm wrong. It says it was only by repeated humiliations that we were forced to learn something about humility. Repeated humiliations that we were forced to learn something about humility. It was only at the end of a long road marked by successive defeats and humiliations and the final crushing of our self-sufficiency that we began to feel humility is something more than a condition of groveling despair. That's what the 7th step is about. It's about humility. It says, to get sober in the first place, you got to get humble. You got to look at the humbling things that, I don't know about you, but I came in a room, I thought it was a big shot because every alcoholic thinks they're big shots. Every alcoholic thinks they're smarter and better than everybody else. I ain't going to tell you crap about bad stuff about myself, you know what I mean? Every alcoholic thinks, that the cat's meow, they're smarter and everything like that. And what's the first thing they have you do in Alcoholics Anonymous? You got to pick up a white chip in front of the group. You got to sort of like walk up to the room, pick up a white chip. Every once in a while I say, well, if you're embarrassed, I'll put it here so you can sneak up and pick. Why would you kill somebody that way? Why would you hurt? Why would you enable them to just gain the little humility it takes to walk up and say, I need help? Why would you hate somebody that much so that you wouldn't allow them to even get that little humility to walk up in front of the group? How could you miss the idea of what this thing is about so badly to allow somebody to anonymously sneak into Alcoholics Anonymous? The only requirement used to be an honest desire to stay sober. And then they took out the word honesty because they said that was too high a bar. So the only we don't have much of a requirement here. You could be a pedophile rapist. You could be a crazy person. We got one lousy requirement: a desire to stop, stay sober. Why would you throw out that requirement? Why would you allow them to sneak in through the back door and, you know, grab a chip, you know? And what do you think? You think you're helping somebody? Well, they might drink if they. Well, they're going to drink anyway. They're going to drink anyway. So if they drink, what's so bad about drinking? What's so bad about drinking? You know what they said in the good old days? They said, we don't argue. He said, maybe, John, drinking is the best. Sometimes drinking is the best thing that can happen to somebody. Some people need to drink. They're going to drink. You're not going to stop them from drinking just by handing them a white chip. That's not going to stop them. There's every excuse in the world to drink. Listen, they told me all sorts of crazy crap in here. If somebody hurts your feeling, you're going to drink, well, hey, welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. They were hurting my feelings all the time. So the deal is, I'm looking at this book, and let me get this part out of the way. And all of a sudden, and it takes experience, experiencing life on life terms over and over again. Because if you don't get it right, you know, if you don't get this thing right, you know what happens? You don't necessarily drink. If you don't get this thing right, you know what happens? You experience pain. You experience fear. You experience disappointment. You experience resentment. You experience bad feelings. You experience horrible stuff if you don't get this thing right. And, you know, there are consequences to not getting this thing right. And if I could do this thing right, if I could have the attitude that they tell me I'm supposed to have in all circumstances, good or bad, if I could have the attitude, if I could take the actions that they tell me I'm supposed to take and surround myself with the people they tell me I'm supposed to surround myself with, and commit myself to the behavior on an everyday basis they tell me to commit myself to, no matter what, and to look at the principles, the spiritual principles, that means non-material principles, and think about the stuff they tell me to think about in here, if I could do that naturally, well, hell, I wouldn't be an Alcoholics Anonymous. I wouldn't have a sponsor. I'd be out there doing it naturally. But every single thing they tell me in this deal to do is unnatural, and not only that, uncomfortable for me. And through every device and every rationalize my way out of this thing. I tell myself, rationalize. Let me tell you something. I am my best fan when it comes to logically trying to figure out excuses for not doing what I have to do. And nobody, let me tell you something, if you're an alcoholic, you're a PhD in, let me tell you why I didn't do it. It's not my fault. It's the other guy's fault. I'm a yes only. I'm an if-onlier, I'm a yes-butter, I'm a you-don't-understander, I'm all that stuff, any excuse whatsoever to stay 11 years old and not accept responsibility and not get hurt and not accept the punishment. Any excuse whatsoever to be childish. Any excuse whatsoever. And then suck my thumb and cry about how the world is treating me. Any excuse whatsoever to stay sick. And it has nothing to do with the booze. And the only thing the booze did is allow me to live with my sorry ass self while I was doing it, sedating myself so I wouldn't suffer from the real alcoholism, which happens when you're thinking sober, so that I wouldn't feel the pain. But unfortunately, as you know, you drink long enough, the alcohol even stops working for that. Because I used to get depressed and I drank and it would make me feel better. And you know what happens. It gets to the point where it turns on you. And you get depressed and you drink and you get more depressed. And it gets even more painful. And then you can't stop and your life becomes a bottle. And you look a man in the eye and say, I need help, I can't stop drinking. And you know that your life is unmanageable, and it's unmanageable not because you don't have a girl or not because you don't have money or not because you don't have a car. You got all that stuff going, but you're not even thinking about that stuff because you just can't stop drinking. And you know your life is over and it's never going to be better again. And all of a sudden you come into Alcoholics Anonymous and they say you don't have to drink anymore if you don't want to. And you know the only problem you have is you can't stop drinking. And then you stop drinking for a week, a month, and then 3 months. And the next thing you know, you're saying things like, now I know why I drank. This is for shit. Now I know. Now, because you're experiencing alcoholism. You experience alcoholism without the anesthesia, without the cure, without the joy juice that we use, without the stuff we use. in order to somehow bear life. And that's why they say men and women drink, because they like the effect produced by alcohol. They're restless, irritable, discontented, and a million other lines to that. Diseased. Unless they can again experience a sense of ease and comfort, which comes at once by taking a few drinks. That's what the drink. The drink is the cure. It's the only thing that worked for us, you know? And now it's not working. And now I got to figure out, how do I live life in such a way so that I'm not always feeling sorry for myself, always feeling like a victim, always thinking, always wrapped up in my, how do I do that deal? That's a hard deal. And, you know, I mean, I'm sure every once in a while you feel good for about, you know, 5 minutes. You get a new car, you know, a new girlfriend, a new boyfriend, you know, you get a new job, something happens your way, you feel good. But then 5 minutes later, it's like, you know, that same thing in your brain that tells you I'm on top of the world now and everything's okay. 5 minutes later, it turns on you and you're telling yourself how crappy you're doing and how terrible you're doing. Because you're measuring yourself by the wrong measuring sticks, but you can't help it because that's the way you see life. And you come in here and some sponsor starts talking about God and things starts talking about God and you say, don't you understand I have real problems? I got money problems. Like, you know, I mean, this God stuff. You don't understand. I don't have a drinking problem. I have life problems. You know, I drank because I had problems. Pretty soon my problems will go away, and then I won't have to drink. If I didn't have problems, I'd be okay. Well, let me tell you something. It's never going to happen that you don't have problems. Never, ever, ever. Now, if you're an alcoholic, there's no question about the fact that there are self-induced problems. My life got appreciably better when I stopped digging my own potholes. My life got amazingly better when I stopped hanging around with the people that were getting me in trouble, when I stopped, you know, doing the things, you know. Listen, I lost my charge cards at 9 years sober because I finally found out 9 years sober, if you spend more money than you make, you go into debt. I didn't know that, you know, because to me, the whole point is pleasure. It's all about pleasure. It doesn't matter. Responsibility, forget. It's all about pleasure. It's all about charge it. It's all about if you can get it and they give it to you. Lie, steal. No, I don't think of it as stealing because it's legal. You just give them a card and they give you the stuff you can't afford. Because if I could afford it, if I could afford that lifestyle, I would reach in my pocket and I'd pay cash for it. So all a charge card is to me, I mean, it's different now. It's not the same thing now. But all a charge card was to me is a way I could live the life, a lying life. Now, of course, I didn't think it had anything to do with alcoholism, because, you know, when you come to Alcoholics Anonymous, they say, like, don't drink and go to meetings. And they send up medallions for not drinking. You know, I mean, and that's how they measure. That's how we measure whether you're okay. I mean, you could be having all sorts of incredible life problems in here, but if you haven't drank, you're a hero. And maybe that's the way it should be, and I'm glad that's the way it is. You know, because if you can't get the not drinking thing down, you got a problem. But, you know, when you get to be an old-timer, when you're an old-timer in Alcoholics Anonymous, old-timers look at sobriety a little bit different than, I guess, new people do. It's more than just not drinking. It's like Bill Wilson was talking about when he talked about emotional sobriety, the next frontier. Because he said what our real problem was is unhealthy dependencies. You know, dependencies on a certain lifestyle, on a certain person, on a person thing. We have a book that tells us what the answer is, and we don't want to follow the answer. It says we can't manage our lives. We walk out of here feeling good about ourselves and spend the next 24 hours trying to manage our life. And then don't understand why we feel so crappy, because it's not being managed, because we're poor managers and we can't manage it anyway because we're powerless over it. We have a book that says no human power, no person is going to be the answer to our problems, and then we go out there and try to find that person that's going to answer our problem. And they always seem to disappoint us, and it's never enough. And it says, well, God could have, would have, he was sought, but, you know, we do anything we can to avoid that deal, because that's sort of fanatical. You know, that Jesus stuff and the church stuff and all that sort of stuff. So we sort of water that thing down, and we play sort of make-believe AA, which is not what they did in the beginning. We sort of become dilettantes in here. And we give it like lip service. And we say, I'm spiritual, not religious. Whatever that is. I'm not spiritual. You know, you guys obviously suffer. If you're spiritual, you suffer from a different disease I do. You know what I mean? I'm selfish. I'm self-centered. You know, I got an evil heart. I'm wicked to the core. You know what I mean? Anything that's decent or good about me, I can promise you, has only to do with my faith in God. I promise you that. You know, anything that I do is good. You know, because it says that in the sixth step. It says when it talks about the separation of the men and the boys, the separation of the men and the boys is that person who tries repeatedly on all his faults all his life, so he will grow in the image and likeness of his creator. So when I said to my sponsor and I got mad or I'd hurt somebody or I'd scream or I'd react, I'd say, well, that's just my personality. He'd say, well, it's your personality that's killing you, and I was addicted to my personality, to my wonderful, incredible personality. And he said, you better get rid of that personality because that's the thing that's getting you in trouble. You better find out about his personality. See to it that your relationship with him is right in great events. So in the beginning of the book, it says, we have found much of heaven, and we have been rocketed into a fourth dimension of existence of which we had not even dreamed, which is more than just not drinking. That's not drinking. That's something else. The great fact is just this and nothing less. And this is the great fact, that we have had deep and effective spiritual experiences which have revolutionized our whole attitude towards life, towards our fellows, and towards God's universe. The central fact of our lives today. This is their testimony. This is their story. It says our story is disclosed in a general way what we used to be. This is their story to you. It says the central fact of their lives today. This was central to their life. You know, what's central to your life? I mean, ask, what do you think about all the time? You know, sex, a girlfriend, a boyfriend, a relationship, a car, a job, money. What's on your mind all the time? What's the central fact of your life? You know, if you don't have what they have, maybe it's because you don't have the same central fact going. You know, it says, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. You know, you do what we did, you'll get what we got. Why do people come in here and say you think that you're going to get what they got and not do what they did and not take them seriously? Why do you think you're just going to come in here and not drink and pick up a chip and then go out and do this exactly the way you want to do it with that kind of attitude? Well, that's you, Russell. That's not me. I do my own program. Well, that's funny. You know, when I was doing my own program, I was a thumb-sucking crybaby. You know, they have a program in here. It says the central fact of our lives today is the absolute certainty that our Creator has entered into our hearts and lives in a way which is indeed miraculous. He has commenced to accomplish those things for us which we can never do by ourselves. And apparently that's important because in the promises that everybody likes to quote, it says he is doing for us what we cannot do for himself. And at the very end of the book, it talks about the same thing, but it doesn't call it the great fact and vision for you. It calls it the tremendous fact. And it says the same exact thing. It says right here, it says, our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order, but obviously cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. This is the great fact, your relationship with God. On page 29, it says, in the beginning again, when it says we talk about what this program is doing for us, on page 29, further on, clear-cut directions are given showing how we recover. These are followed by 42 personal experiences. Each individual in the personal stories describes in his own language and from his own point of view the way he established his relationship with God. And throughout the book, that's all it talks about. Relationship with God, relationship with God. Burn the idea into the person's mind that he can get well no matter what, anything. Clean house and trust God. Let no man say he needs his wife back, his money back, anything back. The whole thing is about his relationship with God. All through the book, job or no job, wife or no wife, nonsense. You don't need any of that stuff. It's all about your relationship with God. It goes through the entire thing. You know, there is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. We read it at every meeting. I think they were serious. You know, God is apparently important. And then you read, and then you go over to the fifth chapter after you do the fourth step and all those psychological things that you think are all psychological. And this is what it says in the, this is what it says. It says in on the fifth chapter. Chapter six. Right after you go through all that stuff that you think is so, I guess, psychological and into action, it says, having made a personal inventory, what shall we do about it? We have been trying to get a new attitude and a new relationship with our Creator and discover the obstacles in our path. There it is again. There it is again. And then you go up to, it's all over the book. You go up to step eight, and it says, the real reason we're doing all this stuff is to be of maximum service to God and other people. And then you look at the steps, and after 31 years of figuring out who's making it, out of those 4,000 people, 25 graduated, one's still alive and sober after 18 years. And you know what happens? The great thing about staying sober for a long period of time is you start running into the people that have contented sobriety for 20. You see the people that are thumb-sucking sobriety at 10 years. You see the people who are on their 15th marriage after 10 years. You see the people that are whining and crying, sucking their thumb after 10 years. You see the people that, you know, even though they're picking up the medallions, they're feeling sorry for themselves. They're talking about other people behind their back. You see all those people. But, you know, if you stay around long enough, you know, it says experiences. My sponsor used to say, you know, the old saying, he says, when a man with experience meets a man with money, the man with experience will walk away with the money, and the man with the money will have walked away with an experience. There's nothing like, you can argue anything, but you can't argue experience. You know, I mean, listen, I'm tired of the deal. You know, I'm an alcoholic who used to drink in bars, because you know what that is. So I'm used to listening to bullshit, my own bullshit and other people's. You know, listen, I don't want to hear from the guy who says, I haven't done the third step, but this is what I think. Well, I've never done the seventh step, but this is what I think. Well, I've been around AA for 18 years, but I've got 30 days now. You know what I mean? I don't want to hear from. I want to hear from the guy who's doing it. And so you hang around a while, and after you see who's actually making it, who's actually being rocketed in the fourth dimension, who's experienced much of heaven, who's got the joy of living consistently, not once in a while, but consistently over a period of time, and all of a sudden you start looking at this step and you notice something. You notice from beginning to end, it's all about God and your relationship with God. And that's the whole deal. That desire, that deal, it leads you even to who to hang around with. Did you know? It even tells you, it even says it's a vision for you. It says it in vision for you. It says, right here, it says, but still you may say, I will not have the benefit of contact with you who write the book. How am I going to get together with you guys? You guys who really got this stuff. And this is what it says. It says, we cannot be sure. God will determine that. You won't even determine that. Because if we left it up to you, you know who you'd hang out with? The same people you were hanging out with before you got in here. The backstabbers, the backbiters, the crybabies, the people that were bad for you. That's who you would hang out with. It says God will determine that, so you must remember that your real reliance is always upon Him. Not self-reliance, God-reliance. He will show you how to create the fellowship you crave. Now, here's what you're going to say to me. Okay, here's the deal. You say, well, how do I do that? Well, I don't know, but your life depends upon it. You better fucking figure it out. You better figure it out. You better figure it out. I didn't know how to do it either. I was just like you. I walked into Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't understand any of this stuff. You think I understood this stuff? Think anybody understands this stuff? I had no idea what they were talking about. I'd never lived that much. Did you live your life this way? Did you live your life this way? You know, the spiritual axiom, whenever you're disturbed, no matter what the problem, there's something wrong with me. I lived my whole life. If I was disturbed, there's something wrong with you. You know what I mean? Yeah, I blew up your house and raped your dog and killed your chickens, but you shouldn't have called me a son of a bitch. I mean, it was all about you. You know, I mean, I didn't know what they were talking about in this deal. I sat here sucking my thumb saying, what the hell are they talking about? What is he saying? I don't get it. You know how many steppings I had to go through, how many times I had to go to Denny's and hang around these old farts and everything and listen to their crap when they're talking insane stuff? I have no money, I'm dying, I'm being evicted, and they're saying, I think it's time for you to make coffee. What are you talking about? Is it me? They're not listening to me. I've got problems. What do you mean help out a newcomer? I'm dying here. What do you have to go through? How much pain do you have to go through in order to get this stuff? A lot. A lot. A lot. That's the whole point of the seventh step. A lot of stuff. You got to go through a lot of pain. You got to go through suffering. You got to go through so much suffering. Now, you're going to like this. This is a crazy old-timer thing that you start enjoying it. Yeah, I know that sounds kind of crazy. You know? You know what it says in step seven? I'm not making this crap up. You know what's amazing to me? The most amazing thing to me is when you get to the point in your life where you start agreeing with this shit. No, I'm serious. When you start reading this crap and you say, this is my life. When you read this deal right here and it says, when it says, our eyes begin to open to the immense values which come straight out of painful ego puncturing. our eyes begin to open. We start becoming aware, man, the best thing that happens to me is when I get the crap knocked out of me. How long does it take an alcoholic to get to the point, do you think, where they stop from feeling sorry for themselves and complaining and whining at meetings and feeling sorry for themselves because crap's happening in their life, because they don't have money, because all that stuff's happening, to the point where the same stuff is happening to them, but they feel good about it? How long do you think that takes? 5 years? 10 years? 20 years? 25 years. 25. 25, 26. That's what I'd say. About 25, 26. I don't know. I was a thumb-sucking crybaby for about 15. I think I had good sobriety. I was in hand-to-hand combat with the world and wanting to get what I wanted and wanting to get my own way for about, 15, 20 years. I think around, light starts, you start getting a little, I mean, how long do you think you got to be sober before when they tell you you have cancer, you say, thank you, God? How long do you have to be sober when they tell you you have cancer, where you say, thank you, Lord? Thank you for giving me this thing. You must love me a great deal to allow me to go through that deal. Maybe I'll be able to help other people. How long do you think you have to be sober to do that? What kind of sobriety is that? That's different than a not drink and go to meeting sobriety, right? Drink is not even the problem. Drinking has nothing to do with it. That's not whining and going. Forget about the not drinking. How about not whining and going to meetings? Not feeling sorry for yourself and going to meetings. Feeling good about everything in your life, even if it's bad stuff, going to meetings. How long do you think you have to stay sober? And how many things you have to go through that? What kind of man is that? What kind of person is that? Is that what you want? It says if you want, we have. That's what they had. They didn't have just the dry stuff. Our eyes begin to open to the immense values which have come straight out of painful ego puncturing. Until now, our lives have been largely devoted to running from pain and problems. Running from pain and problems. That's what we did before we came into AA. And then for the first 10 years in AA, we talk about how we want to try to avoid and run, and we go to sponsors. What do we say to sponsors? How do I get out of this jam? What should I do? How do I not get hurt? What do we share at groups? This is what's happening to me. I don't know what to do. Save me. I don't want to get hurt. We do the same thing. If you're 20, 30, 40, 50 years, a thumb-sucking crybaby, running from pain and problems, what do you think? You put the plug in the jug, and all of a sudden, you're like transformed? You think differently? How many years do you think it takes? How much do you have to get pounded? How many times do you have to go through it and only turn to him because he's the only thing that will never leave you, will never rust, the government can't tax it or take it away from you, and at 3 o'clock in the morning when you know your life is over and it's never going to be better and you don't want to drink, and so you do that stupid thing your sponsors say, God help me, until you fall asleep, and somehow everything sort of works out and you get better and you get to. How many times do you have to go through that before you absolutely, honestly, absolutely believe, like they believe, that the Creator is the centerpiece of their mind, and like it says in the book, if you stay close to him, he will give you anything you need. Having all power, he will give you anything you need if you stay close to him and perform his work well. How many times do you think an alcoholic has to go through that deal? Like one Saturday night, and then he's got it? 20 years? 25 years? Most people don't even make it to 20, one half of 1%. Even make it to the point where they get that far. Most people die in the vine because they're feeling sorry for themselves. We fled from them as from a plague. We never wanted to deal with the fact of suffering. We never wanted to deal with the fact of suffering. Escape via the bottle was always our solution. Or escape by a love affair. Or escape by any way you want to escape. By charging up a car, buying a blouse. I don't care what it is. Getting a boob job. Whatever it is. You know what I mean? Whatever it is, your escape. Rather than face the deal. Character building through suffering might be all right for saints, but it certainly didn't appeal to us. And that's the deal. That's the seven-step deal. That's it. Doesn't sound too good. Appetizing, does it? You thought it was going to be fun and games, right? Let me tell you something. You hang around here long enough for 25 years, there's going to be people in here that are going to get cancer. Sober. It's not going to matter. Let me tell you something. Sober people get cancer. Two of my sponsors died of cancer. They died. Sober people have some, my current sponsor, he came on one night from a Bible study, because he's a Baptist preacher, and he found his son, his oldest son, in the bedroom. He had blown his brains out with a gun. He was sober. It's coming from a Bible study. You wouldn't know it because he won't talk to you. He'd share it when it's appointed to share it. He doesn't feel sorry for himself about it. You know, sober people who are sober, who focus on, go through the same stuff that you go through. It's just a, you know, worldly sorrow leads to death, leads to drinking. Godly sorrow leads to repentance and salvation. Feeling sorry for yourself leads to death, leads to staying a child, leads to never getting this thing, leads to feeling sorry for yourself all the time, leads to drinking and drinking and keep on coming back. I got another 30 days, another 40 days. Godly sorrow. Not wanting to be the way you are, wanting to change so badly, feeling bad about where you've come to and who you are so that you want to change and looking to him, godly sorrow, not feeling sorry for yourself, but feeling sorry for what you have allowed yourself to become and looking to him and wanting to change, that leads to salvation. That leads to the freedom. That leads to the experiencing much of heaven and being rocking in the fourth dimension of existence, of which you had not even dreamed. You don't hear about this stuff talked. You know, it's straight out of the book, by the way. This is all straight out of the book. I'm not saying anything that isn't in the book that they weren't doing at the time. You don't hear about it much in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know why? Because you don't hear much about it in Alcoholics Anonymous. They don't talk about this stuff a lot. Because it's like, what do they call it? They call it, it's hard doctrine. People don't want to hear it. It's not, we want entertainment. We want to be entertained by a good drunkalogue. Nothing wrong with drunkalogues. We want to laugh, right? We don't want to, you know what they say in here? We want, you know, I don't know about you, but I was dying. I want something with depth and weight. I want to know the answer. Just give me the answer. I don't care how bad it is, just give me the answer. You know, and they're going to be, hey, 1.5%, want the answer. There are some people, that's the guy I'm talking to. You know, hey, all you guys may be part of the 1.5%, I don't know, but I know that's the guy I'm talking to. The other ones aren't going to be interested in it anyway. But I got to talk about my experience. I don't need notes to talk about this stuff. I don't need to look this stuff up. This is my life. Just like it was their life. That's why they wrote it down. The central fact and all this crazy, strident self. Man, you don't have to go to the Bible. People are worried about the Bible. You don't have to go to the Bible. Read the big book. Read some of the stuff they say in there. Some of the crap they say. It's like wild stuff. Read the 12 and 12. I mean, read it. Don't skip over it. I mean, read it. Read the stuff in the 12. Listen, read it. Don't skip over it. Don't say, well, that sounds a little bit too strident. They must not have meant that. It doesn't apply to me. Read it. Read the stuff they say in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know? Read the stuff they said in step 3. Read the third step prayer. Think about it. And then after the third step prayer, read the next line after the third step prayer. We thought well before taking this step, making sure that we were ready, that we could at last abandon ourselves utterly to him. How many people have taken the third step in here? Have you abandoned yourself utterly to him? Well, I don't know what third step you took. You didn't take the third step they took. Oh, I know. I'll work my program. You work your program. I work my program. You work your program. But this was their program. This is the basic text. This is the one we're not supposed to argue with. I'm not telling you. This is what they're telling you to do it. You don't like it, you need to write New York and tell them to burn this sucker. Tell them to take that line out. It says, we thought well. This is what they did. Rarely have we seen a person fail who's thoroughly followed our path. This is what they did. He said, we, that means you, thought well before taking this step, making sure we were ready, that we could at last abandon ourselves utterly to him. Utterly is a pretty wild word. You ever look that up? That's like no reservations. That means absolutely sure, certain, central fact of our lives. I know. You take this into an A room, they'll crucify you, won't they? They'll tell you, we don't want to hear this crap, won't you? They don't want to hear it because it's, what is it? What am I talking about? talking about AA. I'm talking about it. You know what I'm talking about? I'm talking about the big book. I'm talking about the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous and what it says. And they say they don't want to hear it because they skipped over that part. Because they've avoided that part. Because that's why it's 0.5%. Because they figured out as alcoholics because we're crazy. Because it's a serious disease. They figured out how to come in here and pick up a white chip and read this book and not read a thing. And not pay attention to it. And they figured out how to do it. You know, there's a great line in the book of Ezekiel. It's about the watchman, Old Testament stuff. And it says, if you're a watchman, and everybody in here who gets this thing is a watchman, you know, you're in charge of watching out for the wolves and the raiders, and if you don't warn the people, you know, you're as guilty, if they get slaughtered, you're as guilty as them for not warning them, not talking about it. It's great Old Testament stuff. You know, they were reading the Bible for, you know, and, you know, listen, all I know is I'm in here, you know, when I'm asked to do a step series, I'm going to do a step series. I'm not going to worry about whether some guy in the back doesn't like me, or whether some newcomer's going to run out the door because I mentioned the book Ezekiel. I'm not going to worry. I'm going to talk about what works in my life. I'm not going to make believe that I don't have 31 years or that I haven't been around here or I haven't seen what happens. I'm going to talk about what I'm going to talk about. I can't sit around like a codependent alcoholic worrying about whether everybody in the room likes me and trying to give you a message that doesn't offend anybody. If you're not offending at least 25% of the people in the room, you're not saying anything. If you don't have 25% of the people in Alcoholics Anonymous saying, I want to shoot this son of a bitch, you haven't said a thing that's worthwhile. And by the way, those guys, the 25% that hate you, they're the ones that are going to come up really doing this deal because they won't be able to get you out of their mind because they hate you because, you know, when you throw a rock at a pack of dogs, the one that yelps the loudest is the one that's hit. So when the guy, because I've been there, walking out of the room hating somebody, hating them, and you can't, if you're an alcoholic, you can't sit with that hatred. It'll kill you. You'll either drink or you got to somehow, you know, inventory it, or you've got to somehow pray about it, or you've got to somehow do something. And when you start looking into it and you start seeing truths about yourself and all of a sudden your mind starts changing, your attitude starts changing, they're the guys that have to somehow, it bugs them. It gets under their skin, you know, and then eventually they get it. They get it. So don't be so sure that just because somebody doesn't like what you're saying, it means they're not going to get it. It's a pretty interesting process, you know, the way this thing happens in here. You get them if they like you. You get them if they don't like. It doesn't matter. Just talk the truth about your life and what's going on and what the book is all about. You know, that's what we're here for. That's why they pay me the big bucks, right? So thank you very much. God bless you.